Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome to today's episode of the Powered by Transova podcast. I am Sarah Kober, and with me is
Emily Warnemont.
And today we have an information-filled episode. We have with us Dr. John Schmidt, and he is a wealth of knowledge. I think he says he's been with the company for 16 years, and he plays multiple roles within Transova, and so he really brings a valuable perspective to a lot of our services.
Yeah, like Sarah said, he's a veterinarian and he's also our COO. So he sees the company from different points of view, which I think is really beneficial to our episode today. And he just brings up a lot of good topics, I think, that are going to help producers going into spring and looking ahead to implants here in, you know, April, May.
Yep. We cover a lot of, I guess, I don't want to say frequently asked questions, but very common questions that we encounter, and also kind of important questions that if you're looking to improve pregnancy rates, or if you're planning for spring, like you said, there's a lot of good information in this episode. And so I would encourage everybody to listen to this one in particular, you know, when you're thinking through your program and the decisions that need to be made.
Yeah. And if you have more, and I'm sure this episode will spark some more questions. So feel free to get a hold of us or your client service rep, and we'll be happy to talk through that with you. And I think our topics today are going to spark some future episodes, future discussions in the future for us. So without further ado, here is John Schmidt. Welcome, John, to the Powered by Transova podcast. Thank you for joining us this morning. So why don't you start off and introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us about what you do at Transova.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Emily. My name is John Schmidt, and I have been a team member of Transova for 16 years. I grew up in Northwest Iowa on a diversified crop and livestock farm. In 4-H, developed an interest and a passion for cattle genetics and the pedigrees of the cattle I was showing. And through that, found an interest in embryo transfer. And so when I went to my college visit, I indicated that I wanted to go into the repro world. And they said, well, you should probably think about going to veterinary school if that's what you want to do. And so I went to 8 years of college at Iowa State. I graduated from there in 2004 with a veterinary degree and a bachelor's in science, and came right to Transova on the backside of that. So I've been here ever since. My current role at Transova, in addition to being, so I am a veterinarian and I continue to play an active role on our professional services staff. When I am inside a cow, for instance, I spend a lot of my time in work in South Dakota, working for ranchers out in the central part of the state there. I've been blessed with many years there and developing a client base there that I call both my clients and friends as well. And so, in addition to doing that, I also support the company at the operations level as COO. And so when I'm not in a cow and back here at Transova, I find myself on the phone a lot, in meetings and on emails and computers, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of diversity in the weekly roles of what I find myself in.
John, you've talked a lot about the different aspects of your role. What does success look like for you in any given day? Does it change? You know, do your metrics change from day to day because you're kind of involved in different areas? Or can you explain that for us?
Yeah, it certainly does change depending on what I'm doing. But at the end of the day, to be honest with you, success for me looks, it's all about the positive feedback from a client saying that we played a role in their success. And whether I was the guy, part of that team and I had a play into that, or I helped support that team in providing that service, that to me is the ultimate success. You know, our vision statement is multiply success. And so when we do that and we're able to create, you know, calves out of the most valued donor that a client has, or to just, you know, create extra value by placing beef embryos into a dairy cow. Anytime we can provide value and success to the client, I think that's ultimately what it comes down to for me. But you know, if I'm working as a professional service veterinarian, providing the service, and, you know, we talk a lot about bringing the incredible experience to light here at Transova. And so when I'm there with a client on farm, you know, there's three things that go into that. And so it's all about delivering results. It's developing a relationship and a connection with that client. And it's also providing communication down the road. So it's really those three things that go into providing an experience for that client, whether it be in one of our facilities or at the farm there. So that's more on the veterinary side. But then, you know, at the team level standpoint, when we're there trying to decide how do we operate as a company and build on teams and in the toolbox that we have here, that's when we come back to really making sure that our core values are supported and met. And so success at that level is all about applying those core values in the decision-making process. Helping teams win in their roles. And so, you know, I look at operating, you know, as a business, I often look at us as a football team. And, you know, I both play, I'm a player and I'm a coach at times. And coaches are here to help their players win the game. And so when I throw on the COO hat, that's really what I'm trying to do, is help our team members find the right position on the field and win in their role.
So John, we, you know, we've talked a lot with other team members about our company culture and, you know, the excellent client service team that we have that's dedicated to our clients and success. I think we kind of want to take a turn from that and talk a little bit more on the technical side, you know, from your role as a veterinarian. So our first question here for you is, what are some things producers can do now till spring to prepare for implants?
All right. So we're here in January when we're doing this podcast. And between now and implant season, which for a lot of people starts in April, May, June, in that time frame, there's a lot of things that probably happen at the rancher's level. And one is obviously getting new babies on the ground. So that is going to be a big process in and of itself, is hopefully those babies come out by themselves and we don't have any dystocia or calving problems or issues with that. I mean, that would be one thing that I'd maybe consider doing, is if you end up having some calving problems or lactational problems where a calf is not fed nutritionally and stuff, those are probably recipients that I would maybe remove from the pool of available cows for your implant season. But you know, you certainly want to get on the calendar with your local ET practitioner, and as you get closer to those dates, dates fill up. And you know, with some of the new protocols out there, you know, there's one right now that people have been migrating to that I believe is, you know, it adds another week to an already 17-day protocol. So you're looking at 17 to 24 days of synchronization ahead of the implant date. And so you need to get on your calendar, the practitioner's calendar, and you want to get your synchronization schedules in place and put those dates on the calendar, so that you make sure that when seeders go in, when shots are given, et cetera, that does not conflict with a weekend wedding or a show or some other event that you have to be away for. So getting things blocked out on the calendar. And then, you know, certainly the recipient is an important part of that equation. And so we need to make sure that we're taking good care of those recipients from a feed and a mineral standpoint. We don't want those calves, while those cows are lactating, those calves to drag a cow down in body condition. And so we need to make sure that we're getting enough calories and energy into those cows so they aren't losing body condition. We want to make sure that they're getting adequate amounts of mineral that's available to the cows as well, so that they hit the ground running. When it comes to cyclicity and being able to ovulate good oocytes and create good CLs, et cetera. And then, of course, once you get those calves on the ground, shortly there, it kind of all seems to flow pretty quickly there, but you get a calf on the ground and you know, another, you know, within a 2 to 3 weeks later or 30 days later, you're sitting here thinking about trying to get vaccines back into those cows and pour in those cows. So just to keep them on the guidelines. So we want to get those vaccines into those cows at least 30 days ahead of the implant date. And those are just some of the management, routine management things that we think about here over the next 2 to 3 months.
What recommendations do you have to clients that, you know, they might already be in their own, they might be clicking along in their own embryo transfer program or IVF program, you know, and they're moving along and things are going well, but they're wanting to know what they can do to improve their embryo pregnancy rates. I think we get that question a lot as Transova team members. So I just wondered, what key advice or tips do you have for people wanting to improve those pregnancy rates?
That's a great question. And not only are clients asking that question, but embryo transfer practitioners are asking that question. And, you know, we spend a fair amount of time at our continuing education meetings, learning, dreaming, thinking, digesting data, you know, from guys out in the field, in an effort to do this. So it's going to be very dependent on the herd and kind of where their holes are. But I will maybe speak to what I've seen most consistently out there. And I think, ultimately the recipient is the key to helping that embryo, maximize its genetic potential. And so we know that there's these embryos are genetically programmed to perform a certain way. And that can be either limited or enhanced by the recipient that raises that calf. Too many clients look at the recipient as, all, you know, I just need a uterus and I need a cow that can milk and that's it, you know. And, or, you know, some don't even look at it that way. They just want a breathing body to put an embryo into. And I've done, you know, talks on, we call it, are you thriving or are you surviving with your recipient management? And in order to thrive, you know, I think we need to look at those recipients as a key asset in our embryo transfer program, as opposed to just another body in the program. So, you know, some of the games guys will play, and I mean, and we will even, you know, we utilize this in our own system because of no other alternative, but, you know, the best cow is a proven, if we're talking about cows versus heifers, you know, we've got our beef guys using cows, our dairy guys using heifers. So let's focus on the cow aspect of things first with the beef client. The best cow to use in a recipient program is definitely one that's proven herself by raising a calf and lactating. And so, you know, if you're out there utilizing recipients where you're buying open cows from somewhere and you really don't know the history of those cows, we can't expect that cow or a herd of cows that are purchased like that to maybe perform at the same level of a guy who is using his own proven cows they've got calves on their side, and we know that they can raise a calf. Their udder structure is adequate. Their feet and legs are sound. and et cetera there. So that's one thing to do, is really on the cow side of things and looking at your recipient as an asset, and something that's going to, going to either limit or enhance the performance of your calf. On the heifer side of things for our dairymen, there's not a lot of this. I don't know that there's a lot of it going on right now, but from a fertility standpoint, it has been proven that fertility is linked to antral follicle counts. And so that's just basically the number of follicles that an animal is born with. And I mean, there are testing tests out there that we can apply to heifers. So we can pull a blood sample and do AMH testing is what they call it. And that can correlate to antral follicle count, which then correlates the fertility side of things. So when it comes to selection of either of a recipient, those are maybe a couple of items that we can look at applying in both heifers and cows. I'm going to go back to the question of, you know, what can we do to prepare an animal for implant dates here coming this spring? Feed mineral comes to mind with this question as well. And so making sure that our cows are not losing body condition when we're putting them into a synchronization program, we want those cows to be at either a level or an increasing plane of nutrition. In fact, that is way more important than what the cow's body condition is in and of itself. So it's way more important to know their status of nutrition, whether it's declining level or increasing plain nutrition. That's way more important than where they're at in as far as a body condition goes. So that's one other thing to keep in mind. You know, and as I mentioned, availability of minerals that are available to the body and be digested and put to work right away, that's a critical piece of the nutritional side of things as well. And then, you know, when you get into the embryo side of things, certainly, you know, if we're putting in frozen embryos, we're probably going to take a 5 to 8 point hit on preg rate as compared to fresh embryos. So while fresh embryos maybe aren't as convenient in certain circumstances, that can garner you a few extra pregnancy points there. And so, you know, a fresh embryo from a cow I just flushed is easily going to give me the best opportunity for pregnancy rates. Now, a fresh IVF embryo is going to be very close to that, you know, but it definitely your fresh embryo from a flush is you're going to give your best opportunity on the embryo side of things. We've made great strides with the IVF embryo, and it's just a few points behind the in vivo there. So, and then lastly, I'll maybe talk a little bit about heat detection. Some guys are still wondering, do I need to only utilize the cows that are in heat? And it's ideal that a client does throw patches on the cows and heat detect and figure out what days they're in heat to make sure that they're in our window. If they're outside of our 24-hour window, either side of when we're there to put the embryo in, then we probably either don't want to use that. You're not going to maximize your pregnancy rate if you're using cows outside your heat window. So either think about resynchronizing them or passing on them, or putting a lower priority embryo in them. And then, you know, there's things that we can do to force and make sure that cows are in the window. And so either giving a shot of GnRH to force ovulate cows in all at the same time, or maybe cleaning up your non-responders with a GnRH at a certain point after the seeder pull is another way just to make sure that cows are in the window. And what we found is, if you're utilizing a GnRH to either fix time the ovulations of your recipients, or you're using just to clean up the non-responders, we really aren't seeing any difference in pregnancy rates on those GnRH-induced ovulations. So that is a nice way to maybe pick up a few more cows to utilize in well-managed herds.
Yeah, I think that those answers, John, is going to be super helpful to people, because I don't see, I think there's some clients that are new to the embryo programs that don't realize all of the different factors that play into having a successful embryo transfer program. So I think that's all very helpful. I'm going to throw in a question here that wasn't on our list. And you talked a little bit about synchronization protocols. Is there an ideal one for embryo transfer, or is it really up to the herd and, you know, maybe their situation?
Yeah, there is the ideal synchronization program is what best fits into the management structure of your client. So we're going to see different synchronization schedules thrown in different herds based on whether they're a dairy client or a beef client. Double off sync is a very common one used in a 5-day seeder deal, even in the dairies, in the dairy systems. And, you know, all of these synchronization programs really revolve around three different treatment drugs, if you want to call it. You know, you're going to have probably a GnRH type component, maybe throw a seeder in there, and then a prostaglandin for sure is going to be in there somewhere. And so there's a lot of ways you can mix those make your own little cocktail protocol. And there's a lot of different ways you can mix those to get very similar estrus detection or heat detection, heat response, I guess, on those cows. In the dairy world, like I said, ovsync or double ovsync, and then a 5-day seeder are two very common, commonly used protocols. On the beef world, you're probably seeing a lot of people use a regular 7-day seeder type of protocol, where you know seeder goes in for a week, and then you pull and give GnRH, or I'm sorry, give luteolyse or estromate. But a newer, more interesting protocol that seems to be helping with getting more cows to come into heat is a protocol called the 7-7 protocol. And so it's actually a 14-day seeder protocol. So there's an additional 7 days of that seeder being in the cow. But it does, maybe it's showing some promise in delivering a little higher response rate on how many cows come into heat. The cows are coming into heat in nice tight windows there, and you're getting a few more heats off of those cows. And it's almost like there's almost a pre-synchronization step in there. So we're learning a lot from our dairy colleagues on how to pre-synchronize the ovaries and the follicles so that they're maybe better prepared to respond to a luteolyse shot and come into heat there. So, but there's still some guys that use in the beef world that use a 5-day seeder protocol too. And so, you know, personally, I was kind of a weekend warrior with my own operation, and you know, I basically could work on the weekends on my own animals. And that's a nice protocol for those guys who are, you know, you can put a seeder in on a Saturday, get some help to pull on the Thursday, and then you're back to breeding cows and putting embryos in on Saturday and Sunday. So that's a nice protocol for those people who are limited on days of when they can do things. So
a lot of good information just in those last two question and answers. I think another question we experience a lot at Transova, and you've mentioned, you know, the in vivo versus the in vitro embryos. And I think in the last, and maybe even in the 16 years you've been here, John, there's been such a dynamic shift between, you know, the amount of embryo transfer we do versus in vitro fertilization. Tell me about that balance and how that has shifted. You know, should IVF always be a client's first option, or, you know, are there instances where embryo transfer is the answer for them and maybe not necessarily in vitro fertilization? Can you kind of explain that, the dynamic between the two?
Yeah. In 16 years, you hit the nail on the head there with talking about the dynamics between what's changed here. So IVF wasn't really even on the radar when I first came to Transova, and we were using it a little bit on some problem cow type therapies. And now it's really over, you know, we're doing well over 10 times the number of, I think, of aspirations in a year than we are doing in vivo flushes and such. But they definitely each have their place in the toolbox and in a client. You know, a client should not just get tunnel vision with, hey, I'm only here to flush cows or I'm only here to use IVF, because they definitely have applications in both settings. And, one, we often get asked, is it more expensive to flush a cow or to aspirate a cow? And, from a raw dollar figure, it's more expensive to do what other procedure creates more embryos for you, right? Because the more embryos that are made, the higher your bill is going to be. But what you really need to do is you need to look at it on a per embryo basis. And if you take a cow that produces embryos in IVF, but she doesn't maybe work as well in a regular flush program, your cost per embryo can be significantly cheaper in IVF as compared to ET. Most people have the idea that it's way more expensive to do IVF than it is flush cows. And many times it's maybe not the case. And especially if you look at if you're only able to market bulls, or maybe you're only going to market for heifers or a use for the heifers, if you're not using assorted semen technology, you've got excess there that is costing you money as well. So you kind of got to throw all that in the whole equation as to, all right, what's my genetic and reproductive cost to put that calf on the ground, both, in raw cost and then also opportunity cost, because maybe that cow had a Jersey bull calf that really isn't as marketable to me or my program there. So you got to feel out, what's your goals. Can I market both bulls and heifers? Am I really focusing on one particular gender with this mating, with this donor in my program? And then you got to read the donor and how she's responding. And we've got cows that work really well in a flush program, but they don't work in IVF, and vice versa, where a cow won't flush, but she works in IVF. I hope I said that the right way anyway. But you get the understanding that some cows work in one program and not so much in the other. Some cows work well in both. And so you just really got to read the donor and also the sire that you're wanting to use as well. We've seen bulls work extremely well to fertilize cows for a flush program, and you throw them in an IVF, that sperm in an IVF dish, and it just does not work well. Or maybe it'll work well for conventional ferts with IVF, where you don't care about the gender, but the minute you run that sire or that semen through the sorting process, all of a sudden your development rates tank because that bull doesn't sort very well for some reason, or his sperm cells don't like traveling through a machine at 60 miles an hour there. So there's, I wish there was a golden ticket to say, here's what you need to do on every donor in your program, but it's just not that simple. And so I encourage anybody who's utilizing advanced reproductive technologies to work with, the client service rep that they're working with, because they guide clients through these decision-making processes on a daily basis. And then also when you got the professional services team at your farm or your dairy, and you got kind of boots on the ground with the company that you're working with, go through the program, identify your goals, sit down and have an annual sit down with your folks and if needed, and say, here's what I'm trying to chase. Here's what I need. What tools do you think I need to be working with? And, the one tool that we really haven't talked about today is cloning as well. And some of our clients, kind of forget about that component to produce maybe the genetic nucleus of their herd where they're on a donor that they're not getting enough embryos out of or something. So we can always replicate and make a genetic twin to that donor and be flushing two of those copies of each other down the road. So,
yeah, that's all great information, John. One other thing I think around this topic that we get questions on a lot is, you've got a young heifer that you're really hyped on, and what at what age can you start doing these procedures? Is there at this age she can only do one, or can she do both? Can you maybe talk about that thought process of getting young heifers started on a repro program?
Yeah, in general, heifers, the interesting thing about doing IVF and that technology, one of the advantages that offers is we can start producing progeny or embryos on a heifer at a younger age with IVF before we can in a conventional flush program. And so you can really push that envelope as in regards to generation turn with IVF and a heifer. In general, we'd say, 6 months is a good target to maybe start your first aspirations of doing regular aspirations on a heifer. We can certainly tighten that down if needed, and we've got tools to do that. But in general, we just a lot of the heifers that we're working with are going to start at 6 or 7 months of age, and that's mainly in the dairy side of things. It seems like most beef guys are waiting till they're more closer to a year of age. 10 to 12 months maybe to start working with beef heifers there. You're going to see your embryo results. You're going to see lower results in a heifer as compared to a cow, simply because the eggs and the oocytes are still going through, becoming what we call competent. And so they're still kind of developing and maturing and et cetera in the animal. And so we can get a lot of oocytes out of heifers, but the development rates are going to be lower in a heifer as compared to a cow. And then, you couple that with the fact that a lot of producers doing IVF in young heifers fertilize those heifers to young bulls in their battery or young bulls out on the market. And so you've got young semen trying to fertilize young oocytes, and there are complicating factors there and stuff. So I guess I'm just throwing it out there that don't have the same expectations maybe for young heifer IVF as you do with beef IVF, but it's still a very powerful tool to turn generation interval in a quicker manner. And as far as if I had a chance to flush a cow or flush a heifer or do IVF on a heifer, I would definitely lean towards doing IVF. I think it's a gentler process, even though we're sticking a needle in the ovary of a heifer and a cow multiple times with the IVF collections. The ovary is a real dynamic organ. It can heal itself quite quickly. And we're not with IVF, we're stimulating follicles, but we're not making that ovary itself, we call it hypertrophy or grow in size, like it does when we go to flush a heifer. And so, we make the follicles grow slightly. We pull the follicles off of the ovary with our needle, in IVF. And so those ovaries, we're not expecting, as much from those ovaries as we do, when we flush a cow, we cause, multiple ovulations on those ovaries. The hypertrophy from multiple CLs being developed on those ovaries. And then those ovaries got to, recover and shrink back down. And that's just a little bit more of an aggressive approach and aggressive treatment on those heifers as compared to the IVF program. So I think our breed back percentage in heifers that have been through an IVF program is highly successful. And, we don't run into near the issues that we can if we're going to flush heifers conventionally. I'd say, one or two times is about all I'd ever want to do it on a heifer. Otherwise, we'd run into breed back problems after a program like that.
I'm going to take that question and flip it. Talk to us a little bit about the advantages of an older animal, particularly the advantages of IVF on pregnant donors. I think that's something that some people know is possible, some do not. But what are those options with a pregnant donor, and why is that advantageous?
Mm-hmm. So the advantage of one of the many advantages of IVF is, we can collect those cows every other week and we can have greater access to that cow. Well, we have more shots on goal in a year with a cow in IVF than we do in a flush program, because we can flush them a heck of a lot more often, or we can aspirate them every other week as opposed to every 5 to 6 weeks, which is what we do in a flush program. But then we have shots on goal, or we have opportunities to collect on a donor in certain parts of a reproductive cycle that we don't when we're trying to flush a cow. So pregnant cow IVF is one perfect example of that. So we obviously cannot flush a cow that has a baby in her uterus. It's just, you can't do it. And so, you know, there's usually anywhere from, I would say on average, 4 to 6 opportunities there that we can, I would say 3 to 5 or 6 opportunities there to do collections on cows while they're pregnant. And those are 3 to 5 rounds of more matings, more embryos that we can produce on that cow that we could not do if that cow was only in a conventional embryo, in a flush program. And so that creates a heck of a lot more opportunity to create more matings, more embryos. And I talked a little bit about more shots on goal there to create that great calf there. So the reason we can do pregnant cow IVF is we are not introducing our ultrasound transducer in the uterus of the cow. We are only going into the vagina of the cow. And so between our probe and the fetus lies the cervix. And that's the entry point into the uterus. It's closed, you know, during that time frame. And so our probe sits in the vagina of the cow. And then the needle actually passes through the vaginal wall and into the, you know, the abdominal cavity, albeit very, very small portion of it, and directly into the ovary of the cow. And so as long as we do not disrupt the corpus luteum on that ovary, or the CL, which is producing the hormone that maintains pregnancy during that whole time, we can safely aspirate and remove all the oocytes off of the ovaries, which then go to the lab and make more babies through fertilization. So a remarkable, neat advantage that we have with IVF, no doubt. Great question.
So how many, we get this question too, how many days post breeding or AI would you aspirate a cow? What is that time window that you prefer, John?
Yeah, ideally, great question. Ideally, we'd love to see that cow 40 days or further into gestation before we start aspirating. We just feel like by that time, you've got a pregnancy pretty well established. And we don't feel like, we feel like the risk is less as far as disrupting the pregnancy. I mean, people need to understand that there is still a risk, as there is with any kind of procedure. It's really hard to quantitate what that risk is. You know, there's a risk of a cow having an abortion naturally, even if she's out in the pasture, you know, chewing her cud and eating hay and stuff, you know, and so there's a chance she's going to abort anyway. We really don't have a great way to quantitate what's the risk, what's the elevated risk if we're doing IVF on that cow. But we definitely feel like there's, you know, with any procedure, there's a risk. And so we need to understand that there is some risk there. So 40 days is where we want to start, because we feel like that pregnancy is well established. The risks go down because of that at that point. And then how far and how long can we go? That's going to be real cow dependent, and it's based on her anatomy. As the fetus grows and that uterus gets heavier, eventually it's going to kind of move from the pelvic inlet and from the pelvis of the cow down into the abdomen of the cow. And when that happens, it starts to stretch the broad ligament, and within that broad ligament is the ovary attachment. And so eventually those ovaries just get too far down into the abdomen of the cow, and we can't reach them with our hand and the probe and kind of get those two to meet. And so in general, that happens, you know, around 100, 110 days of pregnancy. But we have definitely seen cows whose anatomy would allow it to happen. You know, we've seen cows aspirated several months into pregnancy, 5, 6, 7 months into pregnancy. And sometimes you can only get one of those ovaries to your probe. And some guys are willing to continue working on only half of the cow because they're looking for every embryo that they can get out of that cow. And so that's our general guidelines. I can say that, you know, you always got guys who are wishing to push the envelope on that. And so we've got guys who breed and AI their cows right around or in between aspiration sessions and such. And so, you know, I've had it where, and in general, it's mainly when you get into the dairy systems where a cow will be bred 1 week and the next week she might be presented to us to do oocyte collections on them. And, you know, we found that those cows can get pregnant while they're in between cycles of doing IVF collections. So those are opportunities that, you know, certainly those come with elevated risks as well in that. And so you got to kind of figure out where your appetite for risk is and kind of settle into where what meets that. But in general, I would say in between 40 and 100, 110 days of gestation is maybe where our target is.
John, we've asked you quite a few questions and you've given us a lot of great answers. You mentioned, you know, that part of your role as a vet is traveling around South Dakota. So, you know, we have a great client service team that answers questions for people, but you are also client facing as you're on people's, you know, farms and ranches throughout the year. Are there any other questions that you commonly face that Emily and I haven't asked you already? Like, is there, you know, are there certain talking points that you usually cover with people when you're there, you know, mm-hmm. that we haven't covered?
Well, I'm trying to think, you know, I would say some of the most commonly asked questions you guys hit, one you didn't maybe ask was, how soon after a cow gets an embryo can I move her? Or whether it be in a pasture, I'm going to trailer her down to a road, or I'm going to take her to another dairy or whatever. I guess that doesn't happen as often, but you know, what do we need to be worried about here? And the answer I was taught back, you know, 16 years ago when I was first getting started is still the answer we give today. And in that we want those cows to really, if they need to go through any kind of stressful events, we want that to happen the day of or maybe the day after the implant, within a day or two of that cow receiving an embryo. And we definitely would prefer to stay away from any kind of stress events over the next week, because, you know, roughly 2 weeks into their cycle between, you know, days 14, 18, 19 of the cycle, right in that time frame, you've got some pretty critical events happening there where the embryo is going to start communicating to the mom saying, I'm here, don't cycle back because I'm here and I want to be your baby. So, and that starts to happen, you know, stuff starts to happen about 2 weeks into the cycle for that to happen. And so between 14 and 21 days, you know, we definitely want that cow, living a pretty stress-free life there. Don't want them jumping on a trailer, you know, to take a three-hour trip down to summer pasture or anything during that time frame. And ideally too, if we can keep any kind of nutritional stresses out of the way there too, you know, so we ideally aren't changing a lot in a cow's diet. You know, maybe hopefully they're not going from a dry lot TMR ration to lush fresh green grass. You know, if we can get that event happening either before our synchronization process happens, or really, you know, after the cows have cycled through and, you know, we're good probably 30 days into gestation or so, if we can avoid any of those kind of stressful events, that's, I guess, what I advise guys to do. So that seems to be one of the real common questions when we're on farm putting embryos in. I'm trying to think of others.
On the topic of stress, John, I know when I was in high school, I mean, practitioners out east this way wouldn't put embryos in on a really hot day. But I know, like out in Iowa, when I was an embryologist, I mean, we were transferring embryos through June and July. So I guess, what are your thoughts around that? Is that a thing? You know, does temperature of the day play, you know, into conception rates of embryos?
Yeah, you know, temperature is one of the things that embryos can act, you know, in a dairy system, for instance, it has been demonstrated that embryos can actually help with fertility in a dairy herd that is in a, you know, in tropical type conditions where you've got high humidity and high temperatures and such. You can actually enhance reproductive pregnancy rates by putting embryos in, as opposed to, you know, making a cow conceive to her own ovulation through AI. But so that's, I guess that's maybe an off topic that we can explore in another session and stuff. But if I'm up here in the upper Midwest, yeah, and it's really hot, I think I hate using weather as a crutch. I personally think it probably, what I've seen in 16 years is a one day of heat is probably not going to be super detrimental to pregnancy rates, but if or you know, or to oocyte quality, or to, you know, embryos coming out of a flush cow, but if those cows are under heat stress for a longer period of time, and particularly if it's a high humidity type situation, that's when I've seen cows shut down reproductively and or pregnancy rates suffer. So you know, be hopeful that if we do run into a high heat, high stress, high humidity situation, it's short lived. And you know, on the donor side of things, we probably see a lot more of an impact downstream, because if, you know, kind of like in the bull side of things, if a bull gets hot or a donor gets really hot, today, we're going to see that in their semen or in their oocyte quality, probably 2 to 3 months downstream, more so than today, because of the production, the assembly line, I guess, of how semen is created and oocytes are created. But on the recipient side of things, I think we can see some effects with heat. But I don't know that I've probably seen it more on the heat detection side of things as opposed to, preg rate of the transfers that we do there. And so if I was, you know, if I had a choice, would I rather have a recipient go through a hot day when she's coming into heat, or on the day of implant? I'd probably say, I don't know. I've probably seen more issues with cows that were hot when they were supposed to be coming into heat, because, you know, piggybacking on an already hot day is a cow that's quite way more active than what she normally is. And so she's trying to ride cows, other cows are riding her. And so she's just, you know, she's going through she's in a sporting event that day because of trying to ride and all that kind of stuff. And so you throw that on top of an already hot day, and I think that can cause some pretty good complications there. So not a whole lot we can do, you know, in beef herds outside of giving them shade. You know, dairy systems are probably better equipped to deal with heat stress because of the facilities that they have with barn ventilation and et cetera. But anything we can do to keep those cows and their body temperature down, I think can help. So, and the flip side, you know, I've actually, one time I saw a set of cows completely shut down from a blizzard like event. It was a set of donors that we were setting up, and I think they went through like a 3-day blizzard, and, you know, heats were way out of whack. They didn't ovulate well. They just didn't stimulate. And so I've seen it happen on the cold end of things too. But it was over like a 3-day blizzard, and it was pretty miserable what those cows were in and stuff. But cows are pretty hardy. But they definitely have their limits and their tolerance there. So.
I feel like you covered a lot of information and a lot of good information that is worthwhile in this session. I think we're coming on an hour now. I don't know if we need to start wrapping up or not, but a question I have for you, John, and this is going back into your role as, you know, a veterinarian, part of the operations team, and a cattle breeder yourself. What do you think the Transova advantages, you know, there's multiple options in the United States, but what do you think, you know, from all those different roles, what do you think are advantages as a company?
It's an interesting question that you ask, because it wasn't on your prep notes by any means, but I actually wrote some stuff down because I was going to bring this up if you didn't. So so this year we're celebrating 40 years of Transova, and I can't let that go unnoticed, you know, with a question like this, because, you know, not only do we have a huge team, I think we're up to nearly, you know, just on the veterinary side of things, you know, we've got nearly 30 veterinarians. I think we've got around 30 veterinarians on staff, veterinarians or, you know, or techs with similar experience there. And, so you couple that times 40 years of experience, and there's just a lot there. And the cool thing is that we have the ability to piggyback on each other's ideas once a month through a company-wide call there. So you've got experience, you know, breathing into each other, and with new people coming on board, we can provide that mentorship and the, you know, experience backfill with that too. So I think the 40 years of Transova is something that we need to talk about. I also really appreciate the innovation of the company, and how it is always looking to the future. And Dr. Faber has been my mentor ever since, you know, I worked for him in undergrad. And one of the things that I've always appreciated about him is the forward thought processes that he has. He's always looking in the future and not wanting to make sure that, you know, we're not the same Transova 5 years from now that we are today, and that we continue to evolve and we grow and create new tools that breeders can utilize, and that our team can put into play as well. And so, you know, we talk about the three unique we call it our traction team, but that at the executive level, we evaluate Transova on a quarterly basis and making sure that we're on track for our 10-year goals, our 5-year goals, 3-year goals, you know, what's our 1-year and quarterlies. But then we also evaluate, you know, several other things. And one item is our three uniques that we talk about. And so the three uniques that we talk about at the Transova side of things are the toolbox, because, you know, no other company can provide the amount of the scale to the team, you know, the number of teams that can service different parts of the company. But then within that toolbox is you can flush cows, you can do IVF, you can have recipient solutions. We offer cloning services, ultrasounding and fetal sexing. And so there's just a lot of tools there that we provide. And I don't know that anybody else really puts together the size of toolbox that we have there. So the second thing we talk about is the brand. And so that's kind of where the 40 years and the client base and loyalty comes into play, and our team within that. And then the system. And within system, there's a variety of deals there. But probably the one that I park on the most is the team. We've got a number of people that are like myself, and that we are cattle breeders ourselves. We live, eat, and breathe. We have passion for the animals, for the genetics behind them. We understand what it means to win on those days that we get great preg rates. We understand, and we can feel the hurt and the sorrow when things don't go so well too. So we have that empathy, and we can feel it when the client feels it there. So, so those are the three uniques that we love talking about within the system. And then maybe one last thing as we head towards, you know, we got many teams going to Oklahoma here this week for the, you know, the substitute for the National Livestock Show. And so shows in general, really revolve around youth. And, when you look at youth activities out there in agriculture, and a lot of these shows, national junior heifer shows, et cetera, we divert a lot of our marketing budget towards supporting the youth. And so, when you're out there at these shows and these sales, et cetera, I guess I just invite you just to maybe pay attention to, you know, the investments that, we're making in the future generations there. So not only are we helping breeders create the future generation, but we're also investing in our youth, and making sure that we've got a pipeline of young people coming through, internship programs and college experiences, et cetera, that can go to work for us and our clients in their programs as well.
Awesome. Yeah, that's all great stuff, John. Well, anything else that you want to add or things that we didn't cover today?
No, that's, I think that's it. Ladies, I really appreciate you guys putting these podcasts together. And that's a weekly ritual for me as I get on various forms of podcasts and, you know, try to be enriched by hearing from lots of different people and such. So hopefully, I know that there's people out there that will hopefully bear some fruit for your efforts. And I appreciate you having me on the show today.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. And you shared a lot of great information so that we could probably stem off and do some more episodes about too.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much, John.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.